No, you start. I'm eating soup.
Bob.
Slurping soup.
Bob, Andrea.
Yeah.
Will either race get ugly in the final hours?
Get?
More?
Like, are we expecting some last-minute big surprise?
You know, campaigning on some racial hot-button, over-the-top thing in some neighborhood in New York, or voter suppression in New Jersey. Remember
how about
the
overweight? All fat people can't vote.
There you go. Walking around money. What election was that in New Jersey, Bob? The famous walking around money?
That has been with us forever.
But that was, who was it, Ed Rollins or somebody?
That's right. He raised that specter.
Christy Todd Whitman.
Walking around money to suppress a vote. That was the controversy at that time, not to get out a vote. Wasn't it?
Well, it's been both. It's been the idea of giving people cash money to go and, $100, I think, is it going right now, to make sure that you get other folks out to vote. And then, the idea that there was money given to not have people turn out. The other thing you have to keep an eye on, and there is from time to time we do see Department of Justice intervention here in New Jersey. There are certain counties that are historically covered under the Voting Rights Act where there have been past instances that are documented of intimidation, particularly of Latino voters, when there is false representations made that they have to have certain kinds of identity, identity cards, or even sometimes they'll put up a sign saying that, coming to vote might mean that you would have to justify your immigration status, stuff like that.
Are they all going for Corzine, as far as we know? That is, overwhelmingly Latino voters will vote for Corzine in New Jersey?
No, it's not a monolith at all. And there's particularly, Christy's done a good job organizing the Right to Life community. The Pentecostal and Catholic churches play a very big role in the Hispanic community. And Christy's, got his share of those supporters.
Yeah, I'm Brian, I'm thinking about this question, the New York City mayor's race. And I'm wondering if sort of the Giuliani moment was the sort of closest racial eruption we're going to get. I mean, I was thinking about in the Ferrer Green race, where there was that sort of distasteful cartoon of Al Sharpton and Ferrer that was allegedly distributed by the Mark Green campaign in the runoff election that became an issue for the general election. I mean, in some ways, it's almost surprising that we haven't had more of that. Interesting. I'm wondering if sort of, it's almost sort of, I think it's almost too late for something like that to have an impact on the election in New York. And I'm not sure about New Jersey. I don't know. What do you think, Bob?
No, I think that what's going on right now is they're just trying to get out their bases. There is a couple of wild cards here. One is there's a vote on the ballot that you've covered extensively, Brian, about the open space question, $400 million of additional borrowing to support Green Acres. I have noticed a significant grassroots campaign with signage that is associated with the Tea Party folks. Mm-hmm. They're having gatherings around the state. Historically, New Jersey's always supported open space ballot initiatives, but we had, ever since the stem cell referendum went down to support stem cell research, people have been wondering if New Jersey, just with the current fiscal crisis, is really turned the page on that. And that might be one of these things, like you see in some jurisdictions, where they put a gay marriage question on the ballot to kind of drive out and to motivate conservative folks who otherwise might stay home.
I thought the Fairleigh Dickinson poll that was out today was very interesting, showing it a statistical debt heat. Which means that, if I were the incumbent governor, I would not want to be going into an election this volatile with a dead heat. On the other hand, as we have said many times before, New Jersey polls do seem to underpoll Democrats. But it is, a totally wild election. And then we have Giuliani there today. We have Obama there on Sunday. What this all means.
Well, if you look at those numbers, the small print, Professor Woolley, who put together the FDU poll, pointed out to me the biggest surprise to Peter, he's been doing this a long time, was that John Corzine is not closing the deal with Democratic voters. Apparently, Peter says he's at like 76% of diehard Democrats, whereas Christie's enjoying 85% support among Republican voters. So that's the wild card. Like, What is it that it's going to take for Democrats to come home to John Corzine? Will it be maybe President Obama living in Trenton, perhaps?
You know, I mean, I'm wondering about this Obama thing, because I have been wondering whether the president's coming in at the last minute, you know, I mean, it seems to me it could have two effects. One effect could be, you know, this is not about presidential politics, leave me alone, I'm from New Jersey, this is about our issues. But there also could be some Democratic voters, those sort of, you know, the kind of Obamanics who were maybe not going to vote in this election, who might feel that, oh, you know, in the end, we don't really want a negative referendum on our president.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Well, one of the things I saw in Hoboken the other night at this very well-attended event that was designed to get to those Obama voters, you had Cory Booker there, Newark Mayor Cory Booker, and Governor Corzine. The room was packed, and they were making exactly that appeal. And Corzine kind of made an historical analysis. He compared to what happened to Governor Jim Florio, who lost by less than 1% to Christy Todd Whitman. And in Corzine's historical analysis, he pointed out that there was also an implication for President Clinton out of that, which set the stage, in Corzine's analysis, for Clinton to kind of get kneecapped, if you will, with health care. And Corzine made the jump to the boo of the crowd that it produced Gingrich. He made the argument that those results, those provincial results, helped culminate in this, what he described as a reactionary turn for the worse.
And various things like that have happened over history. Andrew, you'll remember in 1988 in New York when Jesse Jackson was running for president, and there was a lot of voter registration around that effort in the primaries that year. That helped elect Mayor Dinkins in 1989, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there is no question that Dinkins would not have won without the Jackson 1988 campaign.
Which means that the Obama surge in registration last year is still such an unknown wild card in New Jersey. I don't know how Fairleigh Dickinson or anyone else measures projected turnout among those new registrants. I'm sure that's exactly why the president is coming again on Sunday. And, Bob, I don't know how well an event can be designed to energize those people who might be apathetic when they see the candidates being Corzine, Christie, and Daggett.
Well, as I said to Governor Corzine the other night, I went up to him and said, well, this is the third time the president's been in this campaign. I understand one more time he can register to vote in New Jersey. Does this mean you're afraid of where the electorate is? And he said, absolutely not. To him, this is about making the connection that if people really want to follow through on the issues the president's identified, particularly things like health care, that he needs this plebiscite, if you will. Now, it's funny, you know, Andrea put her finger on something that I did pick up while walking around and knocking on doors, which was this kind of thing of, like, I like Obama, but I've been suffering with property taxes for 30 years, and I have to deal with my local concern and a kind of almost resentment among independents of having it looped into this larger national debate.
Right. And the risk for Obama, I think, in coming in again on Sunday is that the national media is going to make a Christie victory, if there is a Christie victory, into something that it's not with respect to the president.
Right.
Because I get the same sense that you do from my callers and people I know in New Jersey, which is this is about local issues. This is not a referendum on Barack Obama's performance in the White House in any way, shape, or form that I can discern. And yet, because there are only these two gubernatorial elections this year, New Jersey and Virginia, and it's the year after he was elected, I think the national political press is going to try to make this something that it's not, one way or the other. And I think the president is more likely to get hurt by that than helped.
Well,
you know, it might be another sort of, you know, trip to Copenhagen for the Chicago 2016 Olympics. I mean, you know, that was sort of the last minute thing in which he went. I mean, in general, historically, voters in a general election don't vote strategically. People don't vote to send a message to Washington. How many voters were there last year, Bob? 600,000 new Democrats?
Well, there were Obama, right? Got like over 2.5 million votes in New Jersey, right, which is a feat. And he brought to the table 600,000 right, new voters that came out of the whole primary process.
Right. Now, and people that I think are an incredible wild card, because those people might actually vote in a strategic way, or they might actually respond to a message from Obama.
Well, right. And what I wanted to say about Corzine made a point that in Hoboken there was last time he only got 5,000 votes. That's where John Corzine lives, is in Hoboken. He got 5,000 votes in 2005, and Obama got like 17,000. So he said to the crowd, "I want to get closer to Obama's numbers," and that's a big difference. If he can roll out of Hudson County, Essex County, and the more liberal parts of Bergen County with numbers like that, then he'll pull it out.
How about Bergen County? We think of it as, you know, northern New Jersey, right near New York, so it would be in the liberal area, but it's also pretty wealthy. And Bergen County has gone back and forth between Democrats and Republicans over time in gubernatorial elections, hasn't it, Bob?
Yeah, it is a predictor. Generally, you can't win the governorship without winning it. The northern part of the county, the Ramsey-Mahwah area, that tends to be Republican. In the southern part of Bergen County, around Route 17 in the area, like around Garfield, you have, you know, traditional blue-collar union households, and that tends to be more Democratic. It is also overwhelmingly white, but there's been a significant increase in Asian and Latino voters. You also have it's kind of racial polarity in the sense that 70% of all of the African-American populations in the southern part of the county in Teaneck, Englewood, and Hackensack, and it's essential for Corzine that he roll out with a big number there. The problem is that the Democratic machine there, Joe Ferriero, the kind of Svengali of the Democratic Party, was just convicted on corruption charges. His top lawyer, Dennis Urey, also was convicted, and the state senator, Coniglio, was convicted. So the question is, are they going to be able to do this execution with the top leadership worried about other things now?
And I won't predict outcomes, but you and I, Bob, have been talking about this pattern in New Jersey that seems to take place election after election, where the voters are disgusted with corruption and lack of performance among the Democrats. So the Republican jumps out to an early lead in a statewide governor's race or U.S. senator's race, but then gradually, tick, 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 people come home to roost and realize, no, I really don't want Brett Schundler as my governor. He's just too Republican, or whoever the case may be.
I don't want Bob Franks as my senator.
Well, not that he was a real, you know, right-winger in that sense. But, yes, in that case, too, they came home despite what Torricelli had done and everything else. You know, people came home to the Democratic
Party.
New York
Times endorsed Bob Franks?
In a blue state. However, I don't think we've seen the same pattern in the polls leading up to this election. So if it's still tied now with Daggett a force and still a wild card as a third-party candidate as to which major party candidate he's going to hurt more, boy, it looks really questionable for John Corzine. He actually could lose this.
Well, there's another variable in there, which is the voting by mail. And there are tens of thousands of folks who are choosing that path. So And also with Daggett, apparently I was with him yesterday in at the Rotary Club in Jersey City, and he was saying he was getting pressure and calls from the Republicans to drop out, including asking him what job he'd like in a Christie administration.
From the Republicans to drop out. So they still think he's hurting Christie more than Corzine.
Well, the conventional logic would be that if you're in a situation where the incumbent Democrat is unpopular, then anyone else but Corzine, if that's your mantra, then that would be true. Although, I have to say, anecdotally, I've spoken to dozens of people, and it splits pretty much down the middle as to the Daggett folks. I mean, I just got my ballot here, and it's kind of like find Waldo in Morris County. He's number six out in the ballot line for Daggett, so that's going to be a big challenge. Is do people have the discipline to follow in and look around the Chinese menu for his name?
So there's the anti-Corzine vote, which could get split between Christie and Daggett. But I also hear from plenty of liberal-leaning voters in New Jersey who think Corzine hasn't performed. They're disgusted with the corruption, and they're finding Daggett an acceptable alternative, you know, a clean government guy who at least he has, you know, nobody's sullied him in any way that I know,
right,
who's got some refreshing views on property taxes, willing to speak truth in, you know, in ways that other people tied to other interests maybe are not, pro-choice. He would sign a gay marriage bill. So I don't know. I think Daggett is drawing from Corzine, too, substantially.
Yeah, I also think that what's happening now is that Christie went through this major ad buy. They decided to have an ad that was in heavy rotation on TV picturing Daggett and Corzine. And in essence, introduced Daggett for the first time to millions of people from New Jersey.
Yes.
I mean, I think that one
so
of
is
the...
That
I mean, I do
shrewd
think
that, on their part to introduce him, or are they, do they think that the number of people that they introduce to him is going to be outweighed by the number of people who cease to vote for him as
well,
a result
took
of this?
Actually, Daggett's numbers, looking at all the polls, there was like a 2 to 3% diminution, which for him, when you're down at like 17%, is significant. So he did take a little bit of a hit through that.
Which usually means, I mean, if Daggett goes into the election with his numbers trending downward, what tends to happen in those situations is that people will vote either Republican or Democrat.
I don't think it's going to happen that much in this race, but you're right. These third-party candidates will tank in the last few days altogether. I think Daggett's got a little more than that. That's not to say he's going to get over 12.
Could be. I mean, it's so fascinating because what happens when people go into the voting booth is that they actually think this through when they're actually forced to vote. And, you know, just...
So, Brian,
I'm dying to ask you about what you thought about the last mayor's debate, but I will just remind all of us that in the primary elections, when Obama was 13 points ahead, 15 points ahead, and then he didn't win, and people were sort of like, what was the matter with our polling models? But I would argue that, in fact, when people went into the voting booth, they changed their mind. They actually just didn't do that. And it would be fascinating to see how that plays out in New Jersey when they actually have the screen in front of them and they have to tap somebody's name. Are they going to actually tap Chris Daggett? So
it will be fascinating.
In this mayoral debate, Brian, I know in the last one you really felt that Mayor Bloomberg had sunk to some lows in terms of the things that he said about Bill Thompson. And I'm wondering what your feeling was about this one.
He was in general, I don't know that he sunk to the same lows in terms of unsubstantiated charges like he did the first time with respect to, alleged Bill Thompson corruption, which there's not evidence for. But the mayor came across very angry, and I thought more so in the second debate than in the first debate, more consistently. I thought in the first debate, the mayor did spend much more time articulating his record and what he thought was positive about his record. I thought in the second debate, he actually spent more time attacking Bill Thompson. Thompson certainly spent the time attacking him. You know, my overall sense is that that debate, seen by many people, though it probably was on Channel 7, probably didn't change anything more than the debate we were in on New York 1.
Bob, you were there.
I would say it intensified passions. I mean, I noticed that you would have, when Mayor Bloomberg was asked about double-digit unemployment in the city, he used it as a way of getting at Thompson with this aside to the effect of, the only jobs he knows about creating are the patronage jobs when he's in the school board and the pay-to-play jobs when he's controller. It was like he was like robo-mayor on looking for any opportunity or pretext to jab him. And, of course, Thompson gave back as good as he got.
Right, and I don't think that it helped Thompson particularly either when he used lines like the Enron of education.
Right.
Yeah, that was such
to describe
over. Well, first
the
of all, I don't even
scores.
Know. I mean, Enron, you know, it's sort of like Enron is sort of a
dated,
I mean, it's a decade old.
At this point, really.
Right? It's sort of like it's not, it doesn't have the potency it once did. But it's also such a
credit
you
default
know, I mean, it doesn't make
tests.
Any sense to, you know what I mean? It's just not, it doesn't really hold true because so many people have experiences with the Department of Education. So it's very hard to make an accusation like that when people sort of understand, okay, well, I may not agree with the direction, but at least they seem to be trying to, you know, do something there.
It's the collateralized debt obligations of language arts.
Okay, so
pretty good.
I feel like we should give the idea.
They meant, I mean, I think it's worth explaining what he meant by that. And I understood what he meant by that, but I don't know
Tony
that
numbers.
A lot of people did. Well, the state numbers have gone up. The New York numbers have gone up on these test scores. But according to the federal numbers, which measure across states and across countries,
right,
they've stayed flat.
But that's a state measurement,
but
right?
But that's a state measurement. So he doesn't get the blame. He doesn't get the credit for the state measurement being off. But that's what they're basically teaching to in the New York City schools, isn't it? The New York State standardized
tests. Yes, absolutely, because all of the bonuses and everything that happens in your school is based on those tests. So you have to do well on those tests, even if you say you don't really care about the tests. You know, it's one of those things like, I don't care about grades, but, don't give me a bad one.
For me, what was most destructive was not what was happening in the debate, but outside. It was a question of scale. You had hundreds and hundreds of construction workers chanting for Michael Bloomberg and this tiny anemic army of, passionate, social workers backing Thompson. I think it was like 25-1 in terms of the scale. And when you talk about getting out the vote operation, that's the same skill involved, is physically getting bodies on the street. And that didn't bode well for Thompson.
You know, I mean, I don't know about the Thompson campaign. Last night they put out a poll, which they had taken, an internal poll showing the race, almost neck and neck, which is inconsistent with all the public polls. So I don't know why you would do that except to further harm your credibility. However, I think that, one of the things that I've been thinking about with this whole Cory Booker thing that came up at the debate, where the mayor said, I have been holding fundraisers for Cory. I've held fundraisers for Cory Booker. And it made me think that sort of we as the media haven't really taken a close look at that, at how the mayor has raised money for other people, because
nationally.
Nationally and locally, because
right.
He, it is true. He doesn't take any campaign contributions. He takes a dollar a year from the city. So in some ways, you can't have a direct avenue to influence the mayor. But if you were somebody that wanted to influence Michael Bloomberg and he was raising money for somebody else, then your ears might perk up. I mean, that is the way that campaign finance has worked. And I sort of feel like I wish that that is something that we all had paid some attention to before now.
Well, it did come up in both debates, this idea of kind of through the looking glass campaign finance with respect to Mayor Bloomberg. And Bob, you brought a story to my attention today about the campaign finance board, the charge by the Thompson campaign to the campaign finance board that Mayor Bloomberg essentially bought the Independence Party line and the Republican Party line by making big campaign donations to them.
I'd be giving a whole new meaning to the phrase party rental.
Exactly. And, instead of them giving to him and him being beholden, he gave to them, and they were allegedly beholden enough to give him their lines to run on, since he wouldn't get the Democratic Party line, and he needed some lines that were pre-existing in New York, so he wouldn't wind up on row N somewhere, like,
right.
Chris Daggett in New Jersey, and people would have to be going searching for the incumbent
right.
mayor. But some of the language in the mayor's legal defense in this, in this document that the Thompson people are pointing out, where the mayor talked about, or his lawyer talked about, a natural advantage that rich people have to sway elections or to give a lot of money to elections. Natural advantage, as if it was some kind of natural God-given law, and that it was not a compelling interest of any government to try to equalize the influence of people with a lot of money and people with a lot of
not like natural selection.
I think that is based in case law, which is, tells you something about the state of American case law, because that basically is sort of how the Supreme Court has ruled, is that sort of, campaign
right.
contributions.
Money equals speech.
But right. that claim goes further to me than Buckley versus Vallejo, which is a Supreme Court ruling from 1976, which says any restrictions on campaign spending. I know this one. I really, if I was a Supreme Court justice, I would have voted the other way. But because it says that any restrictions on campaign spending by a candidate is the same as restricting their free speech. Spending equals speech. But you have laws like McCain-Feingold, which have passed rough constitutional muster, where they're trying to tamp down obscene amounts of corporate speech for exactly that reason, so that those with the deepest pockets can't overwhelm everybody else in terms of meaningful campaign speech during an election season. It doesn't apply to individuals. It can apply to groups and corporations. Corporations aren't even allowed to make campaign donations in this country. So not all spending is equated with speech under the Constitution. So, to make that statement as a matter of general principle by the mayor, I think, goes very far.
I think we should post that. We can post that decision, right, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should post it on, append it to this edition of Digesting Politics.
Buckley v. Vallejo?
No, I didn't mean the Buckley v. I meant the Bloomberg.
The Campaign Finance Board actually found that going forward, right, Andrea,
right.
that this kind of money that is put out there has to be part of the mix.
Right, but you see, there's two different shades here. One is he's giving money to the Independence Party. He's giving money to the Republican Party. Elliot Spitzer gave money to all kinds of Democratic county committees and then won their endorsements. Sort of a time-honored tradition of rich people, not that I'm condoning it. But what I am thinking about is if Bloomberg holds a fundraiser, so 20 people come to his house and he says, give to Cory Booker, there is a sort of functional equivalency between those 20 people coming to his house and maxing
Andrew,
out to his
campaign.
You're
so right, because when we caught up with Cory, Mayor Booker, the next day at this event in Hoboken, he went into some detail about the door. He said, I'm quoting directly, Mayor Bloomberg has opened doors for me, introduced me to individuals who've helped me with my campaign. And you raise a good point, and we've seen this happen even with the Clintons and with other major political figures, how vulnerable it is when you start being involved with these bundler-type folks. And you're right, someone could endear themselves in the mayor's social circle through that kind of largesse.
And I've been asking Howard Wolfson, the mayor's communications guy, well, who's he raised money from? And he said he's raised money from anybody he can. Now, Howard's a smart guy. He's not going to start giving me names at this point in a campaign. But I'm sorry that we didn't try to piece this story together 6 months ago, because obviously it's, a lot of deep digging that has to happen.
And it's one of the reasons why the campaign finance system in New York City is actually one of the most progressive in the country, because they will match, is it 6-to-1?
Campaign variable ratios depending on the level that you get, but that's generally the idea.
But that maximum match comes only for donations up to $250, I think. Is that the right number?
That's correct, yes.
Only up to $250. So there's a tremendous incentive here to, for people to focus on those small contributions. Now, they can hire people to go out and bundle lots of $250 contributions from lots of people who work at Goldman Sachs or however
they do
it.
And they try and do that.
I know they try and do that. But, at least it makes an effort to reward small contributors.
But I got to go, guys.
Wait. Ideological Inconsistency Award of the Week goes to Bob?
Who?
Ryan?
I don't know.
George Pataki for endorsing Hoffman in the 23rd congressional district race upstate, the conservative candidate against the Republican who describes herself as fiscally conservative but moderate on social issues like abortion and
gay
marriage.
Didn't Palin also go with the conservatives?
Yes, they all
too?
Did. Palin, all the conservatives
but Palin
did.
Palin is like that.
Right.
Pataki
Palin
was
is
supposed
like that.
To be the pro-choice
right. He
Republican.
Did not endorse the Republican who
moderate.
Is in his image, and I can't for the life of me figure out what the heck is going on with that.
Rudy's calling me. I've got to go.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.
I don't think we said this is Digesting Politics.
I'm Brian Lehrer with Andrea Bernstein.
And Bob Hanley.
And I think we have one more Digesting Politics for this season after this, and it's going to be the post-election extravaganza.